great people. Go in, tell them Steen sent you, open up your account and see what they open up for you. What they're going to open up for you is your banking needs are going to be taken care of, and you're going to see more things that's going to help you than you ever thought possible. Northwest Bank, member FDIC. My next guest is at MNelson_ISU. It is Matt Nelson. How are you, Matty?
I'm doing all right. It has been kind of a rough Friday, Steen, but we've made it to 5 on Friday, so you've got to be doing great when it's the weekend.
It is. Before we jump into some Iowa State stuff today, it is a sad day, too, with one of Iowa State's greatest fans, Nick Bassett, passing away today. If you're on social media and you're following anybody from Iowa State, you know who he is. You know what he meant to all the athletic departments at Iowa State, but especially the football team and the basketball team. And condolences to his family. A great guy, did great things, and never, ever looked like he had a bad day.
No, I don't think he did, and I want to issue the same condolences to Nick and his family. I got to run into him once near his seats at Jack Trice Stadium and interacted with him a lot on Twitter, like I think most of us did. And you know, I think Nick's story is one of perseverance and courage and also one of perspective, right? Like, I've not had a very fun Friday, Steen. It happens. We go through tough times, but like Matt told Nick, tough times don't last, tough people do, and Nick has to be one of the toughest Cyclones that there has ever been. So I said it on Twitter, I'll say it here again, honor Nick by taking just an ounce of his courage, fortitude, whatever you want to call it, and put it towards your own struggles and your own problems, because Nick was certainly an inspiration in that regard.
Yeah, if you're ever feeling sorry for yourself, look up and look out. And see that it's not as bad and that you can do it. Because, I mean, talk about having things thrown in front of you and having to overcome. That young man did that, and he did it a lot, and I agree with you. Let's talk about the women's game first and the women's season. We're kind of getting into that halfway point. If you had to grade the Iowa State women's season so far, what would your grade be?
That is an excellent question, Steen. I think it's probably an A. The few games here last week were not fun. It was not a great week for them a week ago, but there was some unforeseen circumstances in there. And then there's a team like Texas, Steen. We've talked about it on this show. Iowa State struggles with teams that have a dominant post down low, or just size in the paint in general, and who are really physical. And that has been how Texas has played for a while now. I think Baylor also kind of fits that bill. Both are very good programs. So there's certainly no in losing. They did with those two blips and a tough road loss to a good LSU team, Steen. I think this season is still probably exceeding expectations.
Absolutely. And, you know, that is the kind of the one thing that people that can beat him inside, especially there she is.
Yeah, that you just got a little chime in from Margaret.
I love Margaret. Hi, Margaret. I think that's, you know, having a little bit of I don't know if it was just protocol going through, but missing some of their shooters and stuff, that's gonna affect them. I agree with you. Moving over to the men. I had my oldest son on with me earlier, and I said that when I was watching that game, and I got so frustrated, not with the team, it just frustrated with me as a fan. I'm like, okay, I just had to go away for a while. But if you go back and all you did was you didn't see the score, and you saw that Iowa State was 8 of 16 from the free throw line, and Oklahoma State was 22 of 29. And this is becoming the new stat for Iowa State, and it makes no sense as a stat. So that's why it's such a cool stat, and that's fouls and turnovers. Adding them, the two of them up, they had 38 of them, and they still won. What does that tell us about Iowa State?
Man, it's resilience, perseverance. I don't know, Steen. How would you classify it?
I just never give up. There's nobody. The basketball managers don't give up. The coaching staff doesn't give up. The last player on the bench doesn't give up. They just don't. They won't go away. And I think that's going to be the reason that they can come back. They're 3-5. They've played 8 games. They've played 6. I mean, they've played the most incredible tough games that you can play in your conference. Number one in the country. And they're just saying, we're going to will our way to wins, is working.
It is, no doubt. And in terms of perseverance, like what more do you need to exemplify that than, you know, a guy like Trey Jackson, who made a three. I think he played, 10 minutes, Steen. But a guy who hasn't shot free throws all year, having to come in and be clutch in that moment, that's heart right there. That's what that is.
I think the coolest thing, too, and I think it's going to happen more often, I think you're going to see more game time with him and, oh, my gosh, my guy, Tyreke Hunter, on the floor at the same time.
I would think so. And Trey has kind of been his backup to now.
Yeah.
But Trey's certainly earned minutes. I know TJ trusts him. You have to wonder if Kalscher or Brockington needs a break, if that isn't who we start to see a little bit more of.
And I think the couple of other things that I really saw is you're seeing some growth from Condit, and I don't ever want to hear anybody say that Caleb Grill can't play basketball. He just needed an opportunity and the right coach, and he is – the way he plays defense, nobody thought he was going to do, and the way he's shooting the ball from the three-point line, nobody thought he could do, but we thought he could, and now he's proving that to people.
He is, and, you know, I think he's actually been better on the road this year than at home, which is odd.
Exactly.
Huge minutes from him. And look, I know I'm not much in the business of wanting to crush athletes. There's people who probably wanted to pick apart Condit's play recently, and maybe some of that's justified, even though I do think he had maybe a top five game of his career on Wednesday. But, you know, Kalscher's not your typical two guard from a shooting standpoint. He's been good at times. He just doesn't carry, you know, maybe the obscene confidence you would see from a Matt Thomas type two guard. And I get that, right? He struggled from free throw. He struggled from the floor. But when you watch him play, the reason he is getting the minutes he's getting is because of the savvy he plays with, his defense, and some of the little plays. And those are things that get ignored. He made some excellent passes. There was a play where he threw a great dish to Condit for a dunk. There was another one where he drove to the hoop and threw it back out to Tyreke Hunter, who made a three. Just some of the little things that he does in terms of loose balls and shifts defensively. I'm really pulling for Gabe. I think we'll continue to see this roller coaster with his shooting. But the one thing that hasn't changed is some of the other things he brings to the floor.
And I think the other thing through the first part of the Big 12 season for Iowa State is, even though sometimes I think they get a little too aggressive on defense and the referees call stuff, but I think they're starting to gain a little bit more respect from the referees in the fact that that is hard defense, and it's not just them running out of control and bumping into people. And I think that's going to come around, and I think their foul stuff may go down a little bit. If you had to give them a grade, what grade would you give them?
The defense?
No, just the Iowa State in general for the men.
In general, it's still got to be A-, B-plus in that range.
Yep.
That does sound sacrilegious, thinking what the preseason expectations were. But, you know, I think we're going to really wish we had that Kansas game back, or maybe that Oklahoma game back. And I think the defense, it seems to be when we get good offensive performances that the defense isn't following it, and that's natural, right? I think it's hard for a team to be nails on both ends of the floor all the time. So there are certainly some things that they're still working through and working towards. I think that grade is fair, but I will say, Steen, I think we shouldn't underestimate the value of last night's win, Wednesday night's win, excuse me, and it may not matter if they lose 5 straight from here on out, right? But in terms of where the season sits today, I saw a team on Wednesday that for most of that game was pressing, that looked tight. I didn't see as much enjoyment, as much high-fiving and smiling. And we started to see that at the end of that game. Steve, that game was like two basketball games wrapped into one with how much happened.
Yep.
And I think you go on the road, road wins especially are a chance for that team to get a little closer, to unify. And certainly they overcame, you know, just repeated bucket getting by Oklahoma State and late game mistakes. And one of, you know, broke four humongous and kind of damning streaks that they'd been on, right? The road loss streak.
1,070 days, Maddie. That's a long time.
The one that kills me is how many games we've lost if we're down, what is it, in the last 4 or 5 minutes?
Yes.
A lot of times the game hangs in the balance, and that's the critical juncture of the game, and that just shows how many of those late-game situations did not go Steve's way. And maybe, you know, some of those haven't gone our way this year. So I think this win just does a lot for this team, and I'm really hoping they can parlay it into, you know, putting 70 and up on Missouri on Saturday and holding them to 55 points and rolling that into a big home tilt against Kansas.
Here's the one thing we do, and once again, we're talking to Matt Nelson. He is at MNelson_ISU. Is, I don't know how many tickets are left. I don't know how much they're going to cost, but if you can get down to Kansas City and watch the Big 12 tournament, there's not a boring game that will be played. That's how good this Big 12 conference is right now.
No, and the SEC has got a little excitement. Certainly the Big Ten, Purdue looks great. Illinois is making things interesting. But there is not a league tournament that will have the elite level of shot making and defense and just overall exciting games than the Big 12 tournament. It's always a scene from a fan perspective, and this year it's no doubt going to be the most fiercely contested, intense conference tournament. So not only that, if you can get out to Hilton to watch them at home,
absolutely.
I think this team wants to win at home. I feel bad. I think they've maybe put a little undue pressure on themselves when they play in Hilton Coliseum. So, fan support goes a long way.
I guarantee you there is nobody in the country after halfway through that would want to go down to TCU and play at TCU's home court. And that may be the worst team in the Big 12. And nobody would want to play him with that kind of athletic ability.
No. No, not at all. Same thing with Oklahoma State. That's a team that's not going to be in the dance because they're not eligible. But that's a team that is probably going to be postseason worthy by the end of the season.
Okay, who would have thought this during football season? But we went almost a whole segment, and we haven't talked about the football program.
Crazy, right?
It is. If you... let's do a couple of things first. Jamie Pollard coming out and trying to open up and get a new endowment or whatever for the athletic program. I don't think there was a better time for him to do it than now. Pressure on the football team. How much pressure do you think is on the football team to and what kind of year do you think would alleviate that pressure right now? So it's so early, and I get it so early.
You know, I think there's going to be some self-imposed pressure by players who are returning, and probably by Matt Campbell from a fan. And I think from a national standpoint, I don't think this is a pressure-filled, expectation-filled season at all. And I think that's actually where Iowa State does best. I think you're going to see new faces. Some of this young talent, you know, from these top 35 recruiting classes is going to start to show up. You're going to see a lot of young guys earn very significant minutes this fall. And I think this has got to be a team that Matt and his staff are super excited to coach. And there's going to be a lot of growth from this team. We're starting to get into a team that, you know, was primarily laden with seniors and fifth year seniors and juniors who are, you know, very good players too. Those guys have all moved on and some of those have gone to the NFL. So now you're going to see a few seniors sprinkled in there, but it's going to be a lot of redshirt freshmen, redshirt sophomores, and it's going to be fun to watch.
It is. I agree with you. And of the key players, and I know that, you know, you knew some of them weren't coming back, but the ones that are coming back are really, really big-time key players.
Oh, man, they picked up some big additions that I don't think a lot of us were expecting, and maybe we should have seen. I think they were all guys who kind of blossomed late, who maybe didn't play a lot until their senior or super senior year. So another year maybe does make sense if they spend some time like Orion did not earning a lot of playing time for 2-3 seasons. But enough foundational pieces to continue to make sure that culture stays in the right place and to provide experience while also letting those young guys step up and start to take the mantle.
I think Hunter Dickerson is very happy that Xavier Hutchinson's coming back.
That is a huge one. That, no doubt. I think that guy is a 10-year NFL vet. I think he's underrated, if possible, for as good as he is. He doesn't drop passes. He gets open. He's physical. That I think, is maybe the most significant returner in my book.
And here's one take, and this was my Matt Campbell take, that I talked to some people about in the last 2 weeks, is when you start to look at all the things that happened this year and all the coaches that moved and jumped teams or went places and kind of the not backlash, but just kind of like, wow, I can't believe they really did that. I think Matt Campbell gets that. And I think that's why he's still there, is because he's like, you know what? What am I jumping to? I mean, is Lincoln Riley really going to be better at USC than he was at Oklahoma? Maybe because the Pac-12 is not as good, but I mean, when some of these people are moving, you're like, wow, you know, you heard a lot of people moving, and what did you really get out of it?
Yeah, I think it's kind of the similar. It's no different than the transfer portal, right? I think a lot of people are moving, and not a lot of people are unfortunately getting things out of it. So I think Matt's realized that, and that certainly helps, I think, keep him in.
Maddie, thanks as always, buddy. Take care of her, and I'll talk to you next
week,
man.
And Boris.
Maddie Nelson and Margaret. Love it. You're listening to Steen on Sports on 1700 The Champ. I'll be back right after this break. Be Styles.
Here's a look at... Connect with Steen on Sports at 1700thechamp.com. Real sports talk for real sports fans.
Welcome back in, everybody. Happy Friday. Hope everybody had a great day. A couple accidents out there, so drive safely, please. Get home safe. You're listening to Steen on Sports, bringing sports your way every day right here on 1700 The Champ, real sports talk for real sports fans. Check us out on Twitter at Steen on Sports or at 1700 The Champ. Facebook is 1700 The Champ as well. We have both conference games on this weekend on Sunday. We have a UNI game on Saturday as well. This next segment is going to be brought to you by BetMGM. Those two conference games this weekend. If you're new to BetMGM, download the app, deposit at least $10, put a $10 money line winner on a winner of a game, and if either team scores a touchdown, you win $200 in free bets. No easier way to do that. If you're new to the system, please gamble responsibly and please only gamble what you can afford to lose, but have fun. It changes the way you watch your sports. My next guest is at the B Styles. It is Brendan Styles. B, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. And I in particular can't wait for this Sunday. It should be a lot of fun watching those two games.
It's going to be interesting because, I mean, if I had to sit here and argue both games for either side, I think I can make a good argument for all four teams winning a game. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think that's what you want in your, you know, the championship part of that before the Super Bowl. So it's going to be great. I agree with you.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll just say this. I might as well just start out with it. And, you know, that Buffalo Kansas City game was great. And when I was watching it, I felt like I was watching like the actual Super Bowl, and that whoever won that game would probably emerge victorious here in the next few weeks. But I got to say my tune's changed a little bit on this over the last few days, to the point where I actually think Cincinnati has a real shot at winning.
I don't see how they don't. Unless the Kansas City crowd gets to them.
This is what I look at. Because, yeah, it is an arrowhead. The Chiefs should be favored, even though Cincinnati beat them a few weeks ago. But the thing that stood out to me is you had, on one side, Patrick Mahomes basically had to play the game of his life in order for the Chiefs to win in overtime against Buffalo. You know, and obviously part of that is a credit to the Bills and how they performed, particularly Josh Allen. But that's a little concerning, knowing that you don't have that much margin for error if you're Kansas City. Whereas if you're Cincinnati, you're not only going in with house money here because no one thought you'd be at this point, but you consider that last weekend, that game against Tennessee, they gave up 9 sacks and still found a way to win. I can't imagine Joe Burrow being hit that many times this Sunday, even though Kansas City's defense has improved over the course of the season. I have a feeling that the Bengals are going to do a slightly better job with protection. And as a result, that's going to lead to more plays down the field for Ja'Marr Chase and Tyler Boyd. And I get the sense that Cincinnati is going to just kind of sneak in there. If they can survive that first wave or that first onslaught that you know that is going to come from the Chiefs, I think they can hold their own.
I agree. And here's the part on the second game that I'll throw out to you too, is watching San Francisco Green Bay was, I don't even know what you would think after that. San Francisco, everybody's like, well, Jimmy Garoppolo has a job. I'm like, Jimmy Garoppolo didn't do anything in that game. Zero. And it just, to me, this was just my take. It just looked like after about a quarter, Aaron Rodgers just, I don't think he cared. And that's a crazy thing to say because I know how competitive he is. But you can't lose that game if you're Aaron Rodgers. And I get
it. You know what's scary is Green Bay played about as awful as it could have played. And if it had won, I'd be looking at that and I'd be a lot more worried because it'd be like, okay, they just had their one bad outing and they won. I say thankfully being a Bears fan, the 49ers took care of that. I will say, though, with regards to that second game, I know San Francisco won both meetings in the regular season, but I think back to just a few weeks ago, the fact that the Rams had that lead early on, and this time around, I would imagine they're going to play, but I look at Trent Williams and George Kittle both getting hurt late in that game on Saturday against the Packers, and I kind of wonder just how good to go they're really going to be, and that could have an impact on the 49ers offense, and I'll tell you right now, if the Rams can get any pressure on Garoppolo, that minimizes the number of big plays that they're going to need from Matthew Stafford, and combine that with the home crowd, I think the Rams have a real shot at getting them this third time around. And at the end of the day, I think it's going to end up being L.A. and Cincinnati.
Man, how tight does Sean McVay have to be right now? He gets them at home. They don't have to leave for the Super Bowl. It's right there. And he's 0-6 against Shanahan.
Yeah, but you have to think though with all that talent that LA accumulated that at some point it's going to click. And that was kind of the vibe that I got watching them last Sunday against Tampa Bay, especially when you consider that Tristan Wirfs was out for the Bucs. That ended up being killer because as a result, the Rams with guys like Aaron Donald and Von Miller and Leonard Floyd, they were able to get pressure on Tom Brady. And I know the Bucs had that comeback late, but the fact that the Rams, they built a big enough lead where that wasn't enough to kill them. And I think that's one of those things where they have a lot of momentum coming off of that. And I get that they're going to be playing a San Francisco team that's going to feel like it has nothing to lose to having won 3 straight road games, one of which being against the Rams. But I think the home crowd, I think it's going to definitely play a difference this time around. And I do think that if the Rams build a big enough lead against the 49ers as opposed to 3 weeks ago, they're not going to let it slip away.
Once again, we're talking to Brendan Styles. He's at TheBStyles on Twitter. Okay, so this leads me into my question for you to either see if you're excited or ready to vent. So if you look at the Cincinnati Bengals, they have been one of the laughingstocks of the league. They draft a quarterback, they get a coach that is coaching a quarterback, and they went from where they were to, if we listen to B, which I listen to a lot on betting, they may be going to the Super Bowl. Are you happy as a Chicago Bears fan of your new head coach?
I'm in wait and see mode right now.
How about your new general manager?
I know that's not the answer you wanted, but that's one of those things where I'll be honest, earlier in the week, I was starting to change my tune off of something that I was saying to you repeatedly on here. about how the Bears, their standard MO is going for that guy who's getting the first opportunity. And then earlier this week, after they hired Ryan Poles, I started thinking, okay, he's best friends with Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan was coached by Dan Quinn. There's your connection. Dan Quinn's going to end up coming to Chicago. And then it caught me a little bit by surprise initially when I heard the news that Eberflus got the job. But again, it goes back to what I said. And I don't know. I'm hoping that the reports are true that Ryan Poles got to make this decision on his own, and that George McCaskey and Bill Polian and Ted Phillips or whoever else, no one else had any influence on him. But again, I go back to what I said before. Like, you go all the way back to Ditka. You had him, Wanstead, Teron, Lovey, Mark Trestman. Granted, he had CFL experience, but he had never been an NFL head coach. Then you had John Fox, and then most recently Matt Nagy. John Fox is the only one who's a retread. Yeah. All those other guys, that opportunity in Chicago was their first head coaching opportunity. So it follows a very similar script in that regard. And I guess if I were to feel optimistic about the hire, it's the fact that he was not even so much that he was in Indianapolis, although I will say the fact that they kept him after the whole Josh McDaniels thing a few years ago, that is encouraging to me. But I think even more encouraging is the fact that in his time in Dallas, he was with Rod Marinelli. And Rod Marinelli was with Lovie Smith. And what that tells me is that Eberflus coming in is to address the culture inside Hallis Hall and have it be something where players start holding themselves more accountable. And I think back to last season especially, there are so many games where the Bears have some careless penalties. If that gets cleaned up, I think that they could be a much better team next season. I don't know what it ultimately means in terms of them being able to win the division or make the playoffs, because we have to see what happens up north and if Aaron Rodgers leaves Green Bay. But it is kind of a breath of fresh air in that regard. And it's something that if that accountability comes, I think it could pay immediate dividends.
How much of an issue is it for the NFL? So you have 9 openings. Your first 2 hires are And I apologize for it, but there are 2 white guys getting their right first chances, and you have some really good African American coaches that are out mm-hmm. there. Is it as big an issue maybe outside? I mean, maybe more for mainstream media than it is for the NFL. I mean, I know they're going to take a hit if it went through and they didn't hire any. I think it's going to be a big
right.
hit.
Oh yeah.
Now, they did hire 2 general managers. The 2 general managers that have been hired have both been African-Americans. So, I mean,
you just made my point.
Yeah.
You just made the point that I was going to make, which is, yes, it is an issue. And look, I get that, you know, it's a fine line because on one hand, yes, you want diversity, especially in the coaching ranks. And I totally get that. But you also are relying on these front offices to be hiring the best coaches available. And, you know, in a position like Chicago, if they really believe Matt Eberflus is the best candidate, then that's a good thing that they hired him then. But to go back to your point, the fact that you had Ryan Poles in Chicago and you have, I forget his name now, but the guy that the Vikings just hired.
Yep, I had it too, and I didn't see it. Sorry.
I think that's a bigger step in the right direction, frankly, because I believe that having more general managers that are people of color will ultimately lead to more coaches that are people of color as well.
And I'm with you. I agree with that. And so this was just my one other take. Just wanted to get your mm-hmm. take on this. Ryan right. Poles, any way that, and I know they've looked at some other people, but any way that maybe now, since he was so set on this, that he goes to Eric Bieniemy and says, Eric, listen, this gives you a chance. You come be up our offensive coordinator up here. You know who Matt is. You know the kind of culture that he's going to have. You get to add to that culture as well. And now people get to see, is it Andy Reid or is it you? Or is Eric Bieniemy just smart mm-hmm. enough to go, hey, Andy Reid is a barbecue rib away maybe of not being here. And I have Patrick Mahomes. I'm staying in Kansas yeah. City because I want this job.
I think it's the latter.
I do too.
Honestly, it's one of those things where yes, Ryan Poles had the responsibility of hiring Matt Eberflus, but I think now that you have the coach in place, I think it should be up to Eberflus to decide who his assistants are going to be.
I agree with that, too.
In that respect, if you're Eric Bieniemy, why would you leave Kansas City for another offensive coordinator job? Exactly. I would only leave that for a head coaching job, and that's only if it comes my way.
Right. The one that I think is got people pretty up in air is that when you have someone like Byron Leftwich, too, who is a really good offensive-minded coach, and
Jacksonville's crazy if they don't hire him.
Yeah, and if it means you have to get rid of Trent Baalke, that nobody in the league has any respect
nobody
for.
Nobody in Jacksonville likes him.
No, so I that just shows that when you have ownership that can't get past that, they're never going to be any good. Chicago Bulls. Still doing okay. Still playing well. The Caruso injury.
They are, but they're treading water. And thank you for bringing that up, because here's where the event's coming.
Gotcha.
Can you explain to me, or anybody out there explain to me, how on earth Grayson Allen only got a one-game suspension for that?
I think he should get suspended. I mean, the guy had a reputation.
He's out 6 to 8 weeks, and Grayson Allen had the reputation coming into Duke. Everyone knew this. Everyone who followed college basketball and followed the NBA draft, they knew exactly what these guys were going to be getting. And the thing that annoyed me the most was the Milwaukee Bucks, the very next morning, they had a planned social media post that featured him on it. And it's just like, this is after he's already the center of controversy. Maybe you could change it up to, like, have Giannis be the guy that's promoting whatever you're promoting. That made me mad.
I'm with you.
Because Caruso's a huge piece to the puzzle for the Bulls, as somebody coming off the bench. I was happy to see DeMar DeRozan get named a starter for the All-Star game.
Me too.
I think you can make an argument LaVine could have been as well, but I get it. The fans that want to see Trae Young, I totally understand that. And with KD being out right now, maybe that opens the door for LaVine to end up starting. Who knows? But right now, I go back to what I was saying before. At this point, they're kind of just treading water. And it's just a matter of, you know, maybe they don't end up being one or two, but if they could at least be in a position where, say, they can stay top four and have home court in the first round, I think that that's an ideal scenario at this point that I would take right now if you told me that that would be the case.
And I just had this come over my phone. The New York Giants hired Brian Daboll today. Daboll, I think that's a good hire for them as well.
It makes sense considering they hired Joe Shen from Buffalo as well.
And that gives Daniel Jones a chance, maybe. So we'll see what happens. Buddy, appreciate it. Have a great weekend. Talk to you next Friday.
All right, sounds good.
B Styles coming in on fire. You're listening to Steen on Sports, bringing sports your way every day, right here on 1700 The Champ, Real Sports Talk for real sports fans. I got one more segment. We gotta pick some games. We gotta look forward to the weekend. I'll be right back.
From Mount Pleasant to Fort Dodge, from Dakota on Sports, 1700 The Champ, real sports talk for real sports fans.
Welcome back in, everybody. Happy Friday, last segment. Drive safe, couple accidents out there, so be careful. Want to get everybody home and have them enjoy the weekend. Football coming on. You're listening to Steen on Sports, bringing sports your way every day right here on 1700 The Champ, real sports talk for real sports fans. Check us out on Twitter at 1700 The Champ, at Steen on Sports. Facebook is at 1700 The Champ. The website 1700thechamp.com. Want to thank my three sponsors, Northwest Bank, Laser Home Services, and BetMGM. Couldn't do the show without them, wouldn't want to do the show without them. Love having them being a part of the show. Want to thank Zach Steenblock, Matt Nelson, and B Styles for coming in here. It was nice having Brendan coming in when you're breaking some news. Brian Daboll is the next head coach for the New York Giants. Joe Schoen was with the Buffalo Bills. That's a good hire. Can't wait to see what his staff looks like. And maybe that gives the New York Giants a chance to step away from what they've been over the past 4 or 5 years and try to get that stigma away. It's a pretty good brain trust right there. and maybe it gives Daniel Jones a chance. And I saw some text out there or tweets out there, social media, that, you know, maybe you could bring in a bridge quarterback. And I think taking from what John Mara said, for the Giants, not that I'm extremely happy if I'm a New York Giant fan with ownership and management, but they never gave Daniel Jones a chance. The people that they brought in to coach that team never gave him a chance. They didn't draft well. They didn't sign free agents well. They spent a lot of money. It didn't work out. And you had a young quarterback that needed to be molded, and he was not. And I heard the same things about Josh Allen. He isn't accurate, makes bad decisions, doesn't stay in the pocket, wants to run too much. I don't know if anybody saw Josh Allen last weekend, but he looked pretty darn good. And that has a lot to do with Brian than it does anybody else. And so I think that of all the hires so far, I think that's the best hire so far. I'm not complaining about the other ones. I get what B is saying. I think Matt Eberflus is a good coach and is going to bring a different kind of system. If you look at the Indianapolis Colts, man, you were on the bandwagon and in the team, or you're not there. And I think he's going to continue to do that. I trust Ryan Pohl as well. I think that was a great hire as well. So, you know, that's kind of where we're at. Now, a lot of these, I think, will start falling once this weekend, we get through this weekend, because they really want to sit down and talk to some of these guys, especially depending on which teams. I don't think anybody from Cincinnati is going anywhere. I really don't think anybody from San Francisco is going anywhere. When you're looking at Kansas City and Cincinnati, I said Cincinnati. So the Rams, there's a couple of people on that Rams team, but I think the Chiefs. I think Eric Bieniemy still has a shot. I think that the Jacksonville Jaguars, they have Byron Leftwich. He was a Jacksonville Jaguar. He's a really good offensive coordinator. You know, Tom Brady likes to do things the way he does, and in him and they work together. They work together and made that happen. He's going to bring a different mindset. He's going to bring a different atmosphere. If for some reason you keep a general manager that nobody in the NFL respects over the potential of getting someone that played for your organization and was a big part of your organization and is a great coordinator waiting to be head coach, you probably don't deserve to have a football team. But you get to have a football team because you have a lot of money. That doesn't make you a good owner, doesn't make you a smart owner. There's a lot of bad run football teams in the NFL. It's shocking that to be able to get into the NFL, it costs you a lot of money. And it's shocking that people have that much money and are that bad at making business decisions. I saw a really interesting tweet. This was something that I've kind of been saying for a while now. I think you have the capability, if you're the Iowa Hawkeyes, to start both Murrays and still have a rotation where at least one of them is on the floor the majority of the game. But in that first, you know, 5, 6, 7 minutes of the game, to have them both on the floor, I think it would open up a bigger area of the court for everybody if they would do that. I don't know who I would, well, I know who I would take out, but you can't, I don't think you can do that. Well, maybe you can, but even with Flip in there too, playing the five, I don't think it matters. They all can run. I think they play well when they're on the floor together. That's just my take. I will probably get lambasted because people don't think I like the Hawkeyes, which is not true. But I think it makes a difference. And I said yesterday when I was talking to David Eicholt, that I like when Toussaint and Perkins are on the floor together. And then I like when Aaron Ulis is on the floor by himself. And I just, Jordy Bohannon has meaning to this basketball team and has meaning on the floor. He's not one of the five best players on the team. I mean, you can come at me and tell me why you think he is. I just don't. And what you get from Connor McCaffrey playing at the free throw line, making passes in and out, use somebody else. Use somebody that somebody has to guard. I just sometimes I don't understand it, but I'm not a college basketball coach that's won a lot of games. It makes a lot of money. It just sometimes I just watch and it doesn't make sense. Today, Dick Vitale was supposed to have his last cancer therapy today. I hope it is. I hope he gets to start making a comeback. I know it's been very difficult. We sometimes forget how precious and just how old some of these guys are that are doing these, and the fact that they still love the game and they still want to be out there and they still want to be doing this and they have such a following and they want to be there. And you fight through stuff like this. It's amazing. I talked a little bit about this with Scott yesterday during the show. I want to talk about it just a little bit more before we go. And then I'll give you my picks for the weekend. I have been reading Jay Glazer's book Unbreakable. And it's about having to deal with mental health. He is one of the most famous and well-respected football, I don't even know what you want to call him, football, just information guy. Everybody loves him. The stuff that he does with the MMA, the stuff that he does for so many people, and yet, in the back of his mind, he doesn't know how to accept success, accept happiness. There's something there that during this turns things gray. And I read, it's funny, I started reading it while I banned myself from watching Iowa State as they come back and won a basketball game. And that is part of my gray. That when things look negative or bad, sometimes I want to go in and pull the covers up and do something to get my mind off. My other part of gray is when there are times that I should be the most happy or think things are going well or excitement or any of that, I always, in the back of my mind, think something's going to happen to take that away. And it's just, it's been a part of my life since I can remember. You know, just in the back of your mind makes it go, well, don't enjoy this success right here because it may go away or something like that. And to be able to talk about it, and I get what, I mean, just reading his stuff, I get why he wanted to do it. Because if you write it down and then you talk about it and then other people read it, then maybe everybody gets together and they go, okay, maybe this isn't what we need to be thinking. And I don't know how you stop that. Because I have extremely wonderful things in my life. I have great friends. I have Nana. I have DJ. I have my wife, Jennifer, and my three boys, Zach, Andrew, and Nate. I have all these things. I have this show that I love to do. And every once in a while in the back of the brain, it sneaks through going, what's going to happen? Just got to talk about it and keep trying to bring it up to make it go away. Hope everybody has a great weekend. Watch these football games. Watch these teams play basketball. Enjoy it. You're listening to Steen on Sports, bringing sports your way every day right here on 1700 The Champ, Real Sports Talk for real sports fans. See you on Monday.
Here's a look at traffic on 101.3 and 1700 The Champ.
Looks like the